It takes a village to raise a child. We all know that, right? But what happens if you can't find your village? Because raising your child is really, really tough. What if you were so filled with shame and doubt and guilt and fear of judgment that you don't share your triumphs and your struggles? You don't talk about it because you don't think anyone can possibly relate. Well, I've been there, and it was really hard for me to find my tribe. So I decided to make mine. I went out and found these amazing mothers who are also in the trenches, struggling to raise their kids. Together, we are a community. And in this podcast, On the Hard Days, you'll find motivating stories from other real moms who get it. We're going to accept who we are and how we show up for our children each and every day, even on the hard days. Welcome back, everyone. I am beyond excited to have this conversation today with Eileen Lamb. She is a published author. She wrote the book All Across the Spectrum. She's a podcast host. She has a massive community following on Instagram around raising her children who are neurodiverse and talking about neurodiversity as a whole, including in herself. So Eileen, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you tonight.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, as we were just saying, one of the areas that people don't talk about too much is about how moms handle raising neurodiverse kids. There's tons of information on how to help the kids, but not as much information on how to help the mom. And that's what I needed when my son was really little. I felt so much guilt and doubt about my parenting abilities. And so I'd love to hear your story. Take us back to the beginning and tell us how this all started.
It is a very long story. To make it short, my son Charlie was diagnosed with autism when he was 22 months old. And after that, I found out that I was on the spectrum myself. Charlie is on the severe side of the autism spectrum. He's level 3. For those who don't know, level 3 is severe. There are 3 levels. Level 3 is the highest. He's mostly nonverbal. He has like 10 words and he's 8. And he communicates with an app on his iPad. And when I say he communicates, like, he can't tell us how he's feeling. He can't answer open-ended questions. He can only tell us wants. So like, he will say, I want cookie. I want swing. But beyond that, even with an iPad, he can't communicate. And that is really hard. But after Charlie was diagnosed with autism, my mom, who's in France, you probably hear my accent, was like, no, he's not autistic. That's such an American thing. You were the exact same way as a child. I'm like, well, I know the doctors here are not wrong. So why was I the same way? And then I started looking into high functioning autism. And, you know, for a while, it was just like a passing thought in my head. Like, I had a lot of similarities with Charlie when I was a kid, but I talked a lot. And to me, it wasn't possible that we had the same condition, the same disorder. But after reading more and more about it, I decided to go through a professional assessment and get to the bottom of it. And at the end of it, I was diagnosed with high functioning autism. And honestly, it was kind of mind blowing. And it explains so many of my struggles when I was younger. Yeah, it was kind of mind-blowing. And I have also a younger son, Jude, who is 5 now. And he's like me. I know people hate that term, but I'll say it. He's very high-functioning. So he was diagnosed when he was 5. When Charlie was diagnosed, when he wasn't even 2. You know, you can see, like, the difference. And, yep, so we're all on the spectrum.
What was that like for you when you found out about yourself? And especially, you were just saying your mom had said that there's no way. I'm wondering what she said when you told her about you. How did you come to an acceptance of yourself in this process?
Well, you know, she said that at first, and then because she didn't know anything about autism, but now she's like, oh my God, that's why you were doing this. That's why you were doing that. So it wasn't about me, because she felt a lot of guilt as a mother, because like I wouldn't want to like be with other children, and like I hated going to like concerts. Like she was trying to make me happy, she would take me to a concert or like fireworks, stuff like that. I'm like, to the grocery store. She's like, hey, let's go to the grocery store, I'll buy you a toy. To me, that was hell. And there are so many things like that to her, or like she was failing me. She was also trying to like get me to, say hi and thank you, like buying, I don't know, that's so French, but like a baguette at the that is very French. But yeah, we would buy bread, and it's like a daily thing in France. You go and you get your baguette, your bread. And I wouldn't say hi, thank you. And she tried so hard to like to teach me what they call politeness, like being polite. And but and she felt so much guilt. Like she's like, oh my God, my kid is rude, me. So after I was diagnosed, like a lot of things made sense, like for her, and it took a lot of guilt off of her. And I'm not saying she was a perfect mother; she wasn't. But a lot of things, like it wasn't her fault. It's just that I was different. And for me, same in a way. A lot of things that made me feel so different, and that I was so hard on myself for. It helped me to be kinder to myself. Like, you know what? You can go to a concert with your friend. That's okay. It's not your fault. You cannot go to the store to buy a gallon of milk. Like that makes you go crazy. It's okay. You can get delivery now. That's the cool thing in 2021. So a lot of things, it really helped me be kinder to myself, but at the same time I was like, oh my God. Okay. I was 25, 26. I was 26, 26. What would have happened if I had gotten help when I was a kid? So the frustration was there. It's like, ugh, I'm 26. I mean, it's still pretty young, but at the same time, all of my childhood, what would have changed if I had gotten a diagnosis?
Yeah. Wow. That must have been, I mean, it's not something that you can just hear that kind of a diagnosis and just wake up the next morning and keep going about your life like nothing ever happened. That's life changing. Even though you're still you, it changes your perspective on yourself, both in your childhood and now. And my question for you is, how did having the diagnosis for yourself affect the way you understood and accepted your children? Did it make a difference?
Yeah, in some ways. Well, so when I was diagnosed, I only had Charlie at the time. He was my only child. And there are a lot of things that I never thought about, like the fact that he hates noise and I hate noise too. Until I was diagnosed, it really never clicked that that was due to autism. It's like, some people don't like noise, but I started realizing all the ways in which, even though I'm really high functioning and he's on the serious side, a lot of our symptoms come together and are similar. And it helped me understand him better in a way. Like sometimes he's screaming and no one knows why, because seemingly there's nothing happening. But I'm like, no, there is. Like, don't you hear that noise? And like, no one hears it, but I do. And in those ways, for instance, it's really helpful. Or like if someone is talking too loud or it's too close to him, like I will understand what he's going through when everyone around him is like, what could possibly be bothering him right now? So in that way, it really helped me understand Charlie. And yeah, I think what was really frustrating though was that I'm like, okay, we share a diagnosis. I have autism, he has autism. Then why can't he communicate? Why can't he talk? Why am I here? I'm married, I have kids, and he can't communicate. Like he's in pain and he can't even tell me where he's hurting. Like how can that be the same diagnosis? And I think it kind of got frustrating at that point to come to terms with the fact that that same diagnosis can mean so many different things for different people.
That's super frustrating. And I think sometimes autism is missed and is labeled as other things. And sometimes it's the other way around. It's labeled as other things. And it should, so even for my own child, he's ADHD, sensory processing, anxiety, giftedness. And a lot of times there are some pieces of that that do look like autism. He's been tested 3 times in his life by 3 different people. And they say things like, no, but he's quirky. You know, there's this overlap. I don't feel like it's clear. And I think that's the problem. It's such a wide spectrum that it's hard to know where it starts and where it ends. Now you talked about one of your children is severe. What the term highly functioning is the worst, but at the same time, we all know what it means. How do you know where the line starts? If moms are listening to this and saying, you know, this sounds a lot like my kid, but I don't know if it's possible, you know, how do you explain that to other moms?
And that is so hard, honestly, even for Jude, our son, who was just diagnosed. So when he was 3, he did the ADOS. Are you familiar with the ADOS? It's like the standard autism test. If anyone is listening, that's what they will do. They have like, usually it's 2 or 3 psychologists that will observe the child and do those specific task and role play with the child. It's called the ADOS, and that's how they diagnose autism. And when he was 3, he was 1 point off on the ADOS. And we're like, the developmental pediatrician was like, you know, I can give you the diagnosis if you want, if you think like he would benefit from therapy, like it's 1 point, you know, it's basically like he was at the cutoff. And we're like, but at the same time, he's never been to school. So he has never been around other children. His only role model as a child is Charlie, who has severe autism. So like, who knows what else he could learn, you know, being around neurotypical children and having more experience like out in the world. And at that time we were like, okay, let's not give him the label. You know, I don't see anything wrong with it, but we felt like he hadn't gotten a chance to really like blossom on his own. And the developmental pediatrician said that was a fine choice. She still diagnosed him with emerging OCD and anxiety and sensory processing disorder, which is not an official diagnosis. It's complicated, but basically sensory issues, right? You know, and she recommended OT and speech and all of that. And she was like, and come back when he's 5, if he's still struggling. And I came back to the pediatrician when he was 5. And I didn't even have autism on my radar anymore, honestly. It was just anxiety. He has such bad anxiety. But we came to the appointment and Jude was like, he got in her face. Like he didn't understand the, you know, keep some space. And he was just like, hey, do you want to see my wallet? And here, this is how many like coins I have. I have $26.13. Do you want to see my mom? This is my mom. And he just like started and she was like, you here for anxiety or for autism? I'm like, well, anxiety. She's like, do you mind if we do a repeat ADOS? I was like, yeah, I go for it. And that's how she did the repeat ADOS, and it was just like no doubts on that one. You know, wasn't even at the cutoff, and that's how he was diagnosed. But he's so talkative, and like you said, there are so many other things that can like act like is that autism, is that OCD plus anxiety, is that OCD plus SPD, is that ADHD, is that ADHD plus gifted. Like, it is so hard to know exactly what it is, and honestly, like, who knows, is it really like autism? I don't know, but all I know is that he's different and he needs some help and some recognition for what, you know, his struggles and his strengths are, which are different from most kids. And to me, that's all it means. But I think that only applies to kiddos who are like Jude and maybe your son.
Yeah, my son. Yeah.
Who are like high. And again, I'm not saying high functioning is, I'm just being very careful with my words because people can get very, you know, angry at terminology, but yeah, I think that only applies to kiddos who are high functioning and who can pass, basically, because like a child like my oldest son, Charlie, who is so severe, like there's no way they're going to be mistaken as they're autistic. There's no doubt, right? It's clear cut. But for kiddos like your son and my son, I mean, it's hard to know exactly, like if it's level one autism or if it's a mix of several things like ADHD and gifted. You know, we took Jude to a different psychologist after the assessment because my husband was like, really, like autism? And, you know, I think for him it's frustrating too because he's the only neurotypical person in the family. Well, he does have ADD, but okay, the only non-autistic person. And the second psychologist was like, I mean, yeah, definitely some autistic behavior, but, you know, could also be ADHD plus gifted. And I think that's what we're talking about. It's very hard sometimes to know exactly what's going on when they're on the high functioning end of things, because it's so, yeah, it's all connected, the overlap.
Years ago, I searched for a group of mothers who might understand what I was going through in raising my out-of-the-box kid, and I came up empty-handed. Instead of strengthening my resolve and digging deeper, I gave up and came to the conclusion the group doesn't exist because I'm doing something wrong. Those feelings of shame, guilt, and doubt stayed with me for years, eventually leading me to create the support group community I wished I always had, which then led to instant friendships. These are mothers who don't need you to explain it. They get it. And now, my support group community, Mothers Together, is thriving. We hold small group, personalized virtual meetings weekly and catch up on our struggles and wins over the last week. We leave resources and questions for each other on our off-of-social-media private forum, and we even attend virtual live Q&As with expert therapists, OTs, educators, and more. If you haven't yet found your people who not only understand what you're going through, but also can completely relate, Mothers Together is for you. If you're looking for lifelong friendships in a judgment-free, personalized space for weeks, months, or years to come, Mothers Together is for you. Mothers Together opens its doors on the first of every month, but signups start the week before. Head on over to ontheharddays.com/motherstogether to get more information, read testimonials, and sign up. Still have questions after you check out the page? Send me an email at ontheharddays@gmail.com or DM me on Facebook or Instagram, and I'd be happy to chat with you personally. I don't want you to ever feel the way that I felt, which was alone, anxious, and depressed. Your people do exist. They're looking for you, too. And you'll find them in Mothers Together. Visit ontheharddays.com/motherstogether for more. Now back to the episode.
Mm-hmm. And I normally would say, all right, well, who cares? Whatever. It's high, quote unquote, high functioning autism. It's ADHD and gifted, sensory issues, whatever. Does it really matter? Except at least, I don't know, in some parts of the world and some parts of this country, you get more services for your child with the label. Exactly. And I even had one mother tell me, I think it might've been two mothers tell me that nurses had hinted that they should just kind of lie and get the diagnosis because it's very close to autism. It might even be autism, but since they don't have the label yet, if they just go ahead and put it down on the paper, they'll get so much more for services. What do you think about that?
No, it's true. Well, that's exactly why at 3, the developmental pediatrician was like, do you want a diagnosis? Basically, because, you know, ABA therapy, at least in Texas, it's only covered by insurance with an autism diagnosis. So if we wanted to do ABA, she would have had to sign on that paper that he had ASD, even though he was 1 point off at 3, right? And I think it's kind of fucked up because are you going to beep that? Yeah.
Right. Nah, I can, but or not, you wouldn't be the first person. It.
It's kind of not right.
No, it fits though. It fits
because you still need help. Like, it doesn't really matter, like, if it's autism or not. Like, I don't know why the autism word is so, like, meaningful that you get services if you have level one autism, but if you're like ADHD, SPD, and OCD, and then you don't get the, like, ABA, for instance. Well, no, that doesn't make any sense. So yeah, I think sometimes, like, autism might be a tiny bit overdiagnosed, but honestly, it's just the system's fault because they make it that you only get the services if you have the autism diagnosis. So, you know, I mean, I'm pretty confident Jude is, the diagnosis is right with Jude. But even if it's not, like, at least he can get all the help he needs, you know? And I'm very thankful for it. I don't think having a label is a bad thing at all.
No, I don't either. In fact, when I got at least some sort of diagnosis for my son, I felt relief. I felt big time relief. And that was just anxiety. That was twice exceptionality. And then now recently it's been ADHD. Sensory issues have been there since he was a baby. I felt pressure taken off of my shoulders when we got some of these labels and diagnoses, because it now was not my fault. I had not done something wrong as a mother in my parenting. Maybe I wasn't tough enough and I didn't hold consequences strongly enough or whatever. And I was too much of a pushover, and I caused these behaviors in my child, or at least, you know, that's what I was thinking. So having a diagnosis was like, thank goodness, it's actually not my fault at all. And I've been doing the best I can the whole time. How did this go down for you? Did you have any time, especially when the boys were little or Charlie was little, when you were struggling with that guilt and sort of doubt? Or were you able to compartmentalize it?
I mean, with Charlie, so first of all, Charlie was my first child. Right. So it's like, it's all new. And, you know, he had a few words when he was 12 months old, up to like 18 months. He never talked a lot. He had like 12 words. So, you know, at 18 months, it's not a lot. It was still like delayed, but we still knew what his voice was like. And he would say, thank you. It was very sweet, like, okay, cool. So a couple of words in French too. Oh. And then he lost them all. And everyone was like, you know, he's learning two languages. That's hard on him. But then it was like, okay, but now he doesn't look at me anymore. All he wants to do is line up his cars, his Hot Wheels. He's just like as meltdowns that last 1 hour. He won't go near other kids. He sleeps on the floor. Like, is that like, what am I doing wrong? What is going on? You know, how do you do it? Because other people are just like, okay, 6:30, kid in bed, you know, dinner at, all of that. Like, everything was a struggle for me as a first time mom. And yeah, I kept like second guessing myself and be like, what am I doing wrong? And then when the diagnosis came, I was like, oh, so I'm not crazy after all. Like, there was something, I don't like the word wrong, but something was going on that was like outside of my control, right? Mm-hmm. And it kind of all started making sense. And yeah, it feels validating. Like, okay, I wasn't crazy. Like, this wasn't normal. It's just, he needed more help than other kids to get there. And so it wasn't about me. It's just, there was that getting in the way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I get what you're saying. It's like validating in a way. And it kind of takes like the pressure off of me. The same way when I was diagnosed, my mom was like, oh, so it was on me. Like, she wasn't saying like, thank you and hi to get her baguette at the store because of me. Just the autism, you know, it's as a mother. I mean, we're always like going to second guess ourselves. I mean, I feel like mothers get judged so much on social media. And I always tell my followers, you know what? We are our own worst like self-critics. Like, we don't need outside judgments. We judge ourselves so hard already. So like, keep it to yourself. Like, there's something you're thinking about. There is no way we haven't thought about it, about ourselves too. So no need to say it seriously. So yeah, no, the diagnosis is definitely, it's a good thing in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all of that. And what I'm thinking about as you were just talking was, you know, Charlie is severe. That, for me, that is an extra layer of stress, an extra layer of worry. How do you do mentally when you're thinking about how you're raising your kids in that one of them struggles a lot? How does this weigh on you, and how are you doing with that?
Honestly, it's really hard because, well, first of all, I don't know if you'll ever be able to live independently. I don't know if you'll ever be able to communicate beyond I want cookie. Like, I don't know if I'll ever know how he's feeling. Like, all, like, hey, Charlie, how are you feeling? Even if he answers with his iPad, I don't know if he'll ever get there. I don't know if he'll ever learn that running in front of a car is dangerous. To him, it's funny right now. They'll just giggle, you know, because when he does that, what do? We run after him to save him from running in front of the car. He thinks that's funny. I don't know if we'll ever get past that. Just last week, we spent a couple days in the ICU because, and the only reason I knew something was wrong was because he was losing consciousness. Mm-hmm. So that's not something you missed, right? But he was unable to tell us anything of how he was feeling. Mm-hmm. All we knew was that he was losing consciousness. His blood pressure was in the 60s over 30s, so like extremely low. His heart rate was in the 50s, so same, extremely low, which again was weird because usually when you have a low blood pressure, your heart rate is high. But Charlie had both that were low. And maybe knowing what he was feeling would have helped us, right? But he couldn't tell us anything. He couldn't even point to tell us if anything was hurting. Mm-hmm. We didn't know anything. And that to me is when the, you know, severe part of the autism really, really like gets to me and makes me angry, honestly. It makes me angry. Because I keep hearing about the autism is a gift narrative on, you know, social media and in the media, like we don't need a cure and this and that. Okay, well, great, you don't need it for yourself. But there are kids like Charlie who like can't even communicate when they're like dying, and they can't even tell the doctors or their mother, anyone, what they're feeling. And that is terrifying, honestly. And I think we need to talk about it more. Because people don't realize how broad the spectrum is. And you have kiddos like Jude who, you know, I feel like we could take him to another doctor and might say, yeah, maybe autism, maybe ADHD, gifted, whatever. But then there are kids like Charlie. You take them to anyone, they will tell you, yeah, it's autism. And he won't be able to, you know, live an independent life. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of autistic adults who are like living in homes, group mm-hmm. homes. You know, what do we do about adults on the spectrum? Those who never learn to communicate, those stories that are not like on the media, because it's not like, hey, this high functioning kiddos graduated from Harvard, because mm. you hear those stories in the media, right? How about kids who never do that?
Mm.
You don't hear about them.
Mm. That's something that I haven't thought about before, especially about when they are older and if they can't live on their own, they're living in group homes. That's a hard pill to swallow. That's a really hard pill to swallow. Are you the type of person who is kind of just eyes to the ground one day at a time focused, or do you find yourself sort of looking long-term at the big picture?
I have a lot of anxiety. I overthink everything. But for that particular thing, over the years, it's been 6 years now since Charlie got diagnosed, I've just learned to like, I try not to think about it. I think about it like one day at a time because it gets so overwhelming. And I feel like so much can change because honestly, with that type of autism, tomorrow it could make like a breakthrough. And then a week later, it could lose everything because there are a lot of regression with severe autism. And you know, and we know now that Charlie is most likely dealing with seizures and stuff. And you know, there is so much going on that we don't have any control over. And I don't want to like put expectations on him and hopes on myself that are not going to happen. So like really right now, my mindset is I want him to be happy today, tomorrow, and, you know, just do the best I can to fulfill his need. But I try not to, yeah. And that's hard because it's like the opposite of how my mind works. Like I said, I have so much anxiety and I overthink, but I force myself to be one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that brave and vulnerable answer because it's true. And so many moms of neurodiverse kids do. I don't think you're overthinking. I think you're thinking and it's normal because there's a lot to think about. I think a lot as well, constantly. It's hard not to. So your goal right now, as you said, is, you know, you want him to be happy. And as soon as you said that, I thought to myself that I want you to be happy and it's tough so tough because you are giving yourself day after day after day. But some of the things that you share on social media, I mean, I was telling you before, your boys are adorable. They're so cute. But you're sharing these intimate, you know, behind the scenes sort of a day in the life of you and your kids. Are you hopeful that your sharing of all of this will make an impact on other moms? And I know it already is making an impact, but is that sort of your goal behind what you do?
Yeah, it totally is. My motto is you are not alone, because after my Charlie was diagnosed, I felt so alone. It was so isolating. And I started writing on social media. It started as a Facebook page just because I wanted to educate people in France actually about autism, because there is a lot of stigma there. Story for another day, but so much. But after I started sharing on Facebook and opening up, a lot of moms like were like, wow, I feel the same way. Thank you so much. Like, I didn't know other people felt that way. And from there, it just encouraged me to like share more and more and more and more. And it just got kind of big, that Facebook page and all that. And now like I read messages every day of people telling me, thank you so much. You make me feel like not alone. I'm like that is the best thing someone can say to me. You make me feel like I'm not alone, because that is exactly why I write. That's exactly what I want people to feel when they read my post. You know, I want them to not feel alone. And yeah, that's really good to hear.
Yeah, that is. I share that mission on a slightly different, but the same idea. And it is such a good feeling, because that's what I wish someone did for me. That is what I wanted when my kid was little. And I didn't get that from anybody because I didn't know where to look. Now you are a published author as well. Tell us about your book.
So my first book is called All Across the Spectrum, and it talks about my journey discovering that I was on the spectrum, but mostly it's about making exactly what I was saying, other parents feel less alone in their journey. I was just trying to talk about give a more realistic view of autism that we usually see these days on social media and in the media. Like I felt at the time that a lot of what I was reading on social media about autism was trying to push the narrative that autism was a gift, which is true for some people. But again, we can't forget about people like Charlie. And to me, it was important because along the way, parents have been silenced by, if you're on social media, you probably know, but parents are being silenced on social media. They're being shamed. It's like, as a parent of an autistic child, you cannot feel any negativity toward your son's diagnosis, or else you're being like insulted. And when I say insulted, that's mild, because that's a lot more than that a lot of the time. So it was important for me as an autistic person to talk to other parents and tell them, you know what, I'm autistic and I'm high functioning. I totally get where you're coming from. You know, autism is not a gift for everyone, and it's okay if you feel overwhelmed. This is hard. And that's what that first book was about, was, you know, I wanted to talk because I wanted to give both sides. You know, the fact that you can be high functioning and go undiagnosed because, well, first of all, when you're a girl, there's a lot of stigma around that.
Yes.
But I also really wanted parents to not feel alone. So it had like a double, double goal, I guess, with that book. And my second book, which is being released in like 1 week now.
Well, yay!
Well, I don't know when you're going to hear this, but yeah, September 15th is more of a self-help poetry book. And I work on it for like 3 years, which is more than the first book. And honestly, I am so excited about it. It's just, it's very, very vulnerable. Everything I say, everything I write, I don't know if it's the autism, but I don't have much filter. So I'm like very vulnerable.
Yep.
Blunt. Yeah. And I just talk about friendships, relationships, and anxiety, love. I mean, a lot of things. And it's kind of like written in a poetic way. And it's much different from the first book, but yeah, it's a good read.
I love, of course. Yes. I love both of those. What are your long-term goals? Are you, is writing books sort of the direction you want to always look towards, or are there other things?
Well, I love writing. I mean, since I was a kid, it was just like writing. Teacher will ask me, you know, when they ask you, what do you want to do when you grow up? Like, oh, I want to write books. And it's always been my thing, right? But that doesn't pay the bills, writing books. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to write a TV show, though. It's been one of my goals for a couple of years, and it's a lot harder than I thought to write a screenplay. But my goal would be to write a TV show that represents all sides of the spectrum in one show. That way you can really show how broad the spectrum is, right? And the strengths and the struggles. But yeah, that's a really hard exercise.
Yeah, but that's
I'm working on it.
I was going to say that's an amazing idea. And if it takes you 10 years, well, fine, but it'll be worth it.
Thanks for the support.
Yeah. You just have to pay the bills before then. But but gosh, that is a great idea. That's a really good idea. There are so many people who still don't even have any clue about autism. And I'm certainly no professional, but really, there's no way he's autistic. He has good eye contact. There's no way he's autistic. He doesn't stim, and there's no flapping, whatever, all this stuff, like, ugh, because there's so much more to it. And I don't know how it became so that it was so badly represented in media. I don't know where that started, but we've got to do something to fix that, so that, because mothers don't get it. And they say, well, what's wrong with my child?
Yep.
You know?
I was saying Parenthood did a good job at portraying autism. I don't know if you've seen it with Max.
Yes, I love that show. That's one of my all-time favorite shows, Parenthood. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a great job showing Max. Yes, I really did love that. And that's just great. That's the tip of the iceberg, but we got to keep it coming. I think that you are an inspiration, because the way that you are putting out your message is vulnerable, but yet it's clear. It puts yourself in the line of fire. You know, I'm sure you hear all kinds of comments that are not supportive, which is terrible. But you still plug on anyway, because you know that this work of sharing this information is so important. Eileen, how can people find you and connect with you to hear more about you?
You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok at The Autism Cafe, TheAutismCafe, The Autism Cafe on all social media. And that's pretty much it. And if you want to check out my book, the first one is called All Across the Spectrum, and the second one is called Be the One.
And that comes out next week, you said, the 15th?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. This will be published and released in September. So that's very exciting. Eileen, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for letting me share my story and ranting on your podcast.
There was no ranting. I promise. You did great.
Good.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to talk with me personally, where we can chat and just get to know each other like old friends, I would love to do a discovery call with you. Go to my website, ontheharddays.com, and click on Schedule a Call. And if you're not already subscribed to this podcast, please do so that you get the latest when they roll out. Not to mention, please leave a review if you feel like this episode spoke to you. That way, the podcast will be shown to more mothers. And finally, you can find me on Instagram at On The Hard Days with dots in between each word, or in my free Facebook community, On The Hard Days Podcast and Community. If you are feeling isolated in your parenting journey, I encourage you to reach out through any of these means so that I can connect you with your people and support you in whatever way you need.